हरि ॐ सहना भवतु प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासवि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
थैंक यू
Page 15, right? The top. At the time of Kamsa's, what was the context? We speak of Krishna's kindness, but even the punishments he metes out are worthy of praise. To this there have been many witnesses, including Kamsa, Kaliya, Putana, and in the more distant past, Bali and others. Okay. Then, at the time of Kamsa's death, Krishna dragged him from his platform in the arena and jumped on his chest. Thus, as Kamsa left his body, he was able to feel Krishna's foot on his chest and see Krishna's blessed face. After Kamsa's death, Krishna arranged a royal funeral attended by the Yadu princes, the cowherds of Braja, and Lord Krishna himself. Like a dear friend of the family, Krishna further consoled Kamsa's widows and granted the vacant throne to Kamsa's father, Ugrasena. Being punished by Krishna so spiritually benefited many allies to Kamsa, including the wrestlers of Mathura and kings like Jarasandha. Only the most malevolent enemies of the Lord, namely Shishupal and Dantavakra, failed to attain his full mercy during their lives. These two demons displeased Krishna by committing offenses against Brahmanas. But because the demons were actually his eternal servants in disguise, in the end they also received his mercy. Opponents like the wrestlers Chanura and Mustika were less culpable. Fighting against Krishna under Kamsa's orders, they had become infected by Krishna's envious spirit. Still, the wrestlers were allowed to enjoy the favor of being embraced by Krishna during combat, just like the cowherd boys of Braja in their mock fights with Krishna. Krishna also honored the wrestlers by conducting their funerals.
Who's Kamsa's envious spirit, right?
Whose envious spirit did I mention?
I think it was Krishna's envious spirit you mentioned.
Infected by... Oh, Krishna. Oh, instead of Kamsa's. Okay, sorry. Yeah, because it's the next line. Yeah. Kamsa's envious spirit. Okay. After consoling the royal ladies, Krishna, sustainer of all the worlds, arranged for the prescribed funeral rites to be performed. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:44-49, footnote 5. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains Krishna's sentiment. O wives of Kamsa, today you have met with great misfortune, but I am obliged, but I am obligated to protect you, so why should you worry? In this way he consoled them. Sardartha Darshani, 10:44-49. Lord Balaram repeatedly captured Jarasandha in combat, but each time released him, just to glorify Jarasandha's prowess. Krishna and Balaram and their friends paid a personal visit to Jarasandha's palace to forever establish his reputation as a great follower of Brahminical culture and a great giver of charity. Right, because he himself respected very much the Brahminical culture. Right, so that was the problem. Shishupal and Dantavakra didn't, but Jarasandha did, and he was very charitable. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Pandrika and other enemies of the Lord received similar merciful treatment. In text 21, by the words Atmana Martita, all killed by him in person, Narada has implied that they all attained liberation. Narada further confirmed this in a conversation with Krishna's father, Vasudeva. Inimical kings like Shishupal, Pandrika, and Salva were always thinking about Lord Krishna. Even while lying down, sitting, or engaging in other activities, they enviously meditated upon the bodily movements of the Lord, his sporting pastimes, his loving glances upon his devotees, and other attractive features displayed by the Lord. Being thus always absorbed in Krishna, they achieve spiritual liberation in the Lord's own abode. What then can be said of the benedictions offered to those who constantly fix their mind on Lord Krishna in a favorable, loving mood? Srimad Bhagavatam 11.548.6. A similar statement appears in the Garuda Purana. Even foolish sinners like Shishupal and Duryodhana, who showered abuse upon the Lord, were cleansed of all sins simply by remembering Lord Krishna. Somehow or other, their minds were absorbed in the Lord, and thus they... attained liberation. What doubt is there then about the destination of those who are overwhelmed with devotional feelings of the Lord? Right, so, one, you bring out the Lord's mercy, right, so that all these things come up very nicely. That the Lord interacts very nicely with all his devotees, and even those who are not, just anybody in contact with him. But there's also the aspect here is that if there's not the devotional mood, they get liberation.
Yeah.
Right? But if they have the devotional mood, then they develop that loving relationship. Right? So this is important. That means what's connected, remembering Krishna, chanting Krishna's name. Anybody who does this gets benefit. Right? But it, since our whole point is that devotional service means the ultimate benefit is then serving the Lord in devotion. Because getting liberation is not that big of a deal. Right? So here in liberation we mean either they merge into the Lord, if they're that inimical, or if they're attracted by the Lord's features in that becoming purified, then they get liberation, means they go to Vaikuntha. But we see the demons always get liberation, but this may take two forms, either going to Vaikuntha or merging into Brahman, depending upon their mentality. Yeah. Right? So if there's an attraction to the Lord, they'll go into the Vaikuntha planets. If they're not attracted, then they just merge into it.
Okay.
Is that some
yes.
sense? Yeah. Okay, next. Demons who... So, does that make sense? So that's why in the Ajamil story,
yeah.
It's not a big deal that he chanted and he was liberated from the servants of Yamaraj. That's not the big deal. You know, we'll take that as the big deal. No, that's not the big deal. The big deal is the next life, then he appeared in a temple, you know, he's not next life means when he came back, when he got a new lease on life. Then he went back and he spent time just sat in the temple and then, you know, performed devotional service and very, very quickly advanced to
yes.
like that.
Is that... He wasn't very inimical.
No, he was just forgotten. Bad. That's he all. Just he forgotten. Wasn't inimical. He was just bad. That's all. you know, and you don't get much more bad than he was.
Well... I mean, there's the West today, and you've got some pretty bad people. Isn't it?
Yeah. But where did they start?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he's got some...
He started from, a higher, you know, good quality, you know, how you say, Brahminical background.
Yeah.
Then he doesn't take care of it. You know, he leaves his wife, his family, everything like that, and then takes up this sinful life.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So that's bad.
That's bad. Also, you still see at 88, he's still going strong.
Yeah.
except for the point of, you know, dedicated. Yamaraj's servants, you know, that was a bit of a blip on the, you know, his progress there. But he understands, you know, how many guys are still going so well at 88?
Yeah, I don't know any.
Yeah, so that means he started young, and was, you know, so this is like, you know, 60 years of...
solid material.
Most sinful guys are dead by that time.
Yeah, that's true.
Something like that. So.
Dedicated.
Yeah. Demons who invaded Krishna's sacred land of Gokula attained from Krishna even greater mercy than the kings who opposed him in Mathura and Dwarka. Kaliya was blessed with the touch of Krishna's limbs more thoroughly than the wrestlers in Kamsa's arena, right? Because they were wrestling, so they were grappling. But Krishna was just dancing on his head. You know, plus, you know, you got Kaliya, I mean, if you look at it from the other point of view, Kaliya got to embrace Krishna for 2 hours. Right?
Yeah.
You know, so that's not, you know, who gets to do that?
No, that's rare.
Yeah. While Krishna enthusiastically danced on Kaliya's heads, the serpent received Vrindavan dust directly from Krishna's feet, the benefit that Kaliya's wife praised in ecstasy. O Lord, we do not know how the serpent Kaliya has attained this great opportunity of being touched by the dust of your lotus feet. For this end, the goddess of fortune performed austerities for centuries, giving up all other desires and taking austere vows. Srimad Bhagavatam 16:37-7. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on this verse. Actually, the mercy giving to Kaliya was not from tapas or dharma. It was just Krishna's inconceivable mercy. This is expressed in 3 verses. We cannot understand what type of pious activity the most sinful Kaliya performed to get this result, Anubhava. What result? It is very difficult to attain a particle of dust at Krishna's lotus feet by any type of pious activity such as tapas. Thus, to get the touch of his feet, to get the feet to dance, and to get them on one's head are so much rarer, right? So he's got all three.
Yeah.
You know, just a particle of dust, but he has so much dust.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And then the dancing, and then on your head.
Yeah.
Right? Lakshmi Devi, who is a greater devotee than even Brahma, who is the intimate... In the intimate of your form is the intimate of your form.
Hmm. Associated or form.
Whatever, we get the idea.
Yeah.
Right? Of your form as Narayana. Though she desired the touch of your feet as a cowherd boy, and for that purpose performed tapas, could not get those feet. Right? So she performed the austerity, but she never got into the Krishna Lila.
Yeah.
Sardartha Darshani, 10:16-36. Right, so that's why we said we do not know how. Because it's not like he did something special. You know, he was just sinful. He was a snake. He was just, you know. Most people, when you say the guy's a snake, it means he's sad. You know? So he was a snake. You know, you're not pulling any punches here, right? Yes.
So Maharaj, generally, Krishna is reciprocating with the devotee, giving mercy, and sometimes he gave exceptional mercy.
Yes, you see that to the demons, and so then that, therefore, in other words, anybody who contacts Krishna. Right?
Can we say that maybe it's for the Leela? There's some...
There's there, but see, the thing is do you need to find something else? Is not the mercy enough?
I think it's okay.
There has to be some mechanical reason.
Yeah, no, that's our contaminated tendency.
You know what I'm saying? So the point is that's there. Now, there are generally always stories behind the stories, but the point is they're not revealed at the same place. They're revealed somewhere else. Like you see in all this discussion about Putana, it's never once brought up about her as Bali Maharaj's daughter. Because then you go, okay, this is the
that's
reason.
Why, yeah. Yeah.
But the point is even that's there, he doesn't have to reciprocate like this. So it is causeless mercy. That's what has to be appreciated. You know, it's just like there. It starts off that if you've accepted that how do you say, Ajamiya was just chanting the name of his son. He had no other intent. And just because he chanted the name, the Vishnu Duta showed up. So he's saved from the Yamadutas. So if we can accept that, then in the next verse where it says, because he chanted anxiety, it was pure. He didn't have a motive at that time. Mm-hmm. But he didn't have an intent on pleasing or attaining the Lord either. Right? So it wasn't offensive. Right, but it came therefore as pure. But we've already accepted the other point. But if we start with that, then we go, well, that's why. Because yes. Otherwise, you tell the story of that, you know, Ajamil and his very no, but he chanted purely. Yeah. You know, so therefore it doesn't apply to us because we're, you know, what I'm saying. So that's the things we're always trying to find this reason in karma. You know, and occasionally a gyan if that's our proclivity. But generally, where you know, karma is more of our. Yeah. Our cup of tea.
So it's like basically lack of faith, having this.
It's a lack of. It's just we're not used to it. We're used to that everything has to have. You did an action, you get the reason. But causeless means there is no reason. Yes. So the point is, he doesn't have to do this. Otherwise, we're saying because in this last life he did this, therefore, then we're claiming a cause. So it's not actually. So it is causeless. And even if someone did that he does reciprocate like that just because he's pleased. But it's not that because someone does something, he has to respond. This is not Jaimini. Jaimini, that's how it is. So when you say the contamination, that's because even when we want to get real technical, then Jaimini is generally as high as we get. You know, like that. Or if we go into Gyan, then, you know, then we have the other schools over there. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the whole idea, is that to bring out, though there is that mercy, there may be these other things, but that's only just bringing out the Lord's sweetness. It doesn't change the fact that he's considering all these things. So that's also his causeless mercy. You know, it's just like this. If someone sees, the Bali Maharaj's daughter sees him, thinks he's so cute, so she has these motherly affections. But then when she ties her father up, then she thinks she just wants to poison the kid. You know, so, you know, for those few moments and then this other attitude, generally people would tend to drop that, you know, this is an option as a relationship. Right? But Krishna then remembers that point of that motherly affection. So that's his causeless mercy. Right, because you generally tend to go by what's the last point that defines the what's before that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? The relationship's going fabulous, and then the person blows up at you and yells and screams, and they hate you and never want to see you again. You don't generally think, oh, but it was, the whole night went good. It was only the last 5 minutes were a bit of a problem. So, you know, 6 hours, it was great, and then, you know, three. So, you know, come on, you know. No, we generally take it, okay, well, that didn't work out. Is that, you know? But so that's causeless mercy. Krishna then would even consider these things. Because he doesn't have to. There's no reason to have to. He's beyond, so there's nothing material you can do to force him. Is that something? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Usually we say that we need more training. In this life, we might go back to Godhead, to Gokul, then we get our training, we will understand. Because yes. If we don't like, for example, association with devotees here, we won't like it there, because nothing will change.
Yes, so we'll avoid.
Yeah, so here we see that in those causeless mercy cases, those devotees, they're quite inimical, usually, to the Lord, or indifferent.
So you feel that there's something unfair here. Why you have to work so hard? And this dealer, he can just sit there and think of Krishna 24 hours a day for years, and without one moment's break. And why does he get to go, you know, get Krishna's mercy? And I, who occasionally think of Krishna, you know, on a good day, you know, why is it that I don't get this?
No, I wanted to be jealous, and I wanted also to go. Not them to be left behind.
Oh, okay. okay, so you're jealous, not envious.
Yes.
Okay. So they can go. I'm going, but they can also go, but I also better be included.
Very, very advanced.
Okay, but did you catch the thing about liberation? Okay, that's a practical point. Okay, obvious. Okay, so you understand. So liberation means only into Vaikuntha, right? Except for Putana. But Putana did have that inclination, that devotional. And also she came as a mother and everything. The others didn't come nicely. Chinnur and Mustika, they come as, like that. Jarasana, they all come and they all, that kind of thing. So. But they're only getting liberation. They're not getting, as such, entrance into Goloka, where you have that aspect of sweetness.
From their liberation, they can go higher? They will be satisfied there?
They'll be satisfied there. But, Jayanti Jaya, they'll be happy back at their post. Then they can talk about, wow, that was horrible. That's something to talk about for, eternity now.
They stand and they've got nothing to do.
Yeah, yes. Talk about this,
I don't know if it's the subject we can discuss later, but it's all this analysis which our mind tends to find in answers. I was finding that this causeless also may bring us to understand more, or willingness to understand the mind of Krishna. For instance, in the case of he being a baby, is he acting actually in regard to time in a way that being an adolescent, he thinks in another way, or it's just because it's...
But he reciprocates with however someone deals. So she's dealing as a mother, so he's reciprocating as that. But at the same time, then there's poison that's involved, so he reciprocates with that. Right? So instead of, she comes, he just stands up and whacks her in the head or something. then he drinks some milk, but also along with her life air. So it's in line with how they're approaching.
He, in many ways, makes us to feel very close, in one sense,
yes,
acting as a regular human being.
Yeah, well, that's the whole point, is that's the fun. Because it's about the relationship. See, is we would tend to think that, why wouldn't you want to use all the mystic stuff? Because if you're God, you can use all these things, that's more fun. But actually, what's nice is the relationship, not all these other things. You do some in amazing ways, but it still has that human element, right? It's like the forest fire is there, he could just make it go out or, do something else, but he just, does like what we would do, So that's the kind of thing is, he does those things, or when it's raining, we put up an umbrella, therefore he lives over on hill, right?
So he seems that in order to enjoy properly, he puts aside his consciousness of supreme.
Oh, that's there. Means it'll be partially there in Goloka, but in Gokula it won't be, because then it's sweetness, so then that will just be Mugdata, right? But when you're talking about Goloka, then there'll be the mix of Mugdata and Sarvajnana, depending upon how they're approaching it. But in Vaikuntha it's just Sarvajnana. So that's always going to. So it depends on the devotees, whether he's fully absorbed or like that.
That's in terms of reciprocating with the devotees.
Yes. Yes. So that's always the best. So because whenever there's majesty means they're worshiping him because of his greatness as the Lord. So the rules, regulations. So therefore, if he's not conscious, he's the Lord. It won't work out so good, if they come with that, with all the musical instruments and the umbrellas and the palanquins, it's time for his bath, and then he goes, well, hey, I can just walk, what's the big deal, it's not going to work out so good, like that. So there's the point, he's God, they're reciprocating with that. So because it's a connection with him, it's a relationship with him, there it looks nice, it's good. But then we see in Goloka, then you have the element of sweetness. But in Dwarka Mathura, it's still mixed with majesty. Right? So only in Braj is it purely for sweetness.
The majesty reflects the devotee's calculative devotion.
It's not so much calculative devotion. It will be that they like to express their devotion through rules. You know, it's just like, let's say, you move in a particular social group. So you know when you greet each other, there's a certain way you'll do it, when you leave, how you'll joke, how you'll talk, what you'll eat, what you'll do. So it's straightforward. It makes it really easy. So you prefer that. Now if you go into an environment where you don't know what it'll be, then that takes much more surrender. So that's the thing, Brajabhasi, that surrender is so great, therefore Krishna can do whatever he likes. Right? Not what they expect, whatever he likes. Right? And then they're going to work with that and be perfectly fine. So that means Krishna can totally relax as himself in Braj, where everywhere else he can't. He has to maintain some form of it. Right? Because God is a person, right? God's just what he does, right? That's his ability, his skill, right? His position. But he's a person, that's another aspect. So in Braj, that can be fully manifest. While in Vaikuntha, then he, as God, that's fully manifest. And then Dwarka and Mathura are in between. Like that. So you have all the flavors, and it's just as it, you know. So it's not sudden. You know, there is that. So into Mathura Dwarka, then you can keep the same mentality. Therefore, Goloka is one, considered one realm. And it's just Krishna. But when you get into Vaikuntha, that takes a whole different mentality. Like that. Because the sweetness of Krishna, it wouldn't go so well with all the reverence. So therefore, in Vaikuntha, then he has four arms, and, you know, so then that works out very good. But in Goloka, then, because there's the aspect of sweetness, then the two-armed form works very nice. Though you see sometimes he does, when he comes into Mathura, him and Balaram, they come in with four arms. But there's still that aspect of sweetness, because it's more sweet than Dwarka. But at the same time, he's doing it with four arms. You know, but somehow not everybody's cool. So whether he has two arms or four arms, they don't seem to really care. You know. So that's why Mathura is kind of a little bit in between. You know, there's not a lot of discussion about that, except for the attraction of the individuals. You know, when he comes, when he comes into Mathura, you hear that discussion. Like that. But in the Krishna book you hear it, Bhishma talks about it like that. So that's the outstanding element. You know, also when he comes to Dwarka, you hear about that. The detail of what he does in Mathura, you don't hear very much. So it's a slightly different flavor. Okay. Thus, Kaliya received special mercy, for Krishna used each one of Kaliya's heads as a dancing stage. He didn't miss out on any of the heads. Krishna was so kind, he danced on 73 of his heads.
All of them.
Krishna danced on more or less all of his heads.
Yeah. You missed one over here.
Yeah. Krishna also accepted worship and prayers from Kaliya, issued him personal orders, and granted him the island of Ramanaka, where he could live free from fear of his arch enemy, Garuda. Indeed, by leaving the mark of the Sudarshan disc on Kaliya's heads, Krishna arranged for Kaliya to gain Garuda's friendship and respect. I guess it's not every day someone has Krishna's footprints on his head, right? Or Sudarshan on his head. Krishna allowed Putana to enter Gokula respectably, appearing among the cowherds dressed as a first-class lady. At the beginning of Sukadeva Goswami's description of Putana's encounter with Krishna, we are told, "My dear king, wherever people in any position perform their occupational duties of devotional service by chanting and hearing, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, there cannot be any danger from bad elements. Therefore, there was no need for anxiety about Gokula, for the Supreme Personality of Godhead was personally present. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.6.3, footnote 8. Srila Prabhupada comments on this theme of danger. Sukadeva Goswami spoke this verse to mitigate the anxiety of Maharaj Pariket. Maharaj Pariket was a devotee of Krishna, therefore when he understood that Putana was causing disturbances in Gokula, he was somewhat perturbed. Sukadeva Goswami therefore assured him that there was no danger in Gokula. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is sung, Namashraya Kari Jatane Tumi Takaha Apana Kaje. Everyone is thus advised to seek shelter in the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and remain engaged in his own occupational duty. There is no loss in this, and the gain is tremendous. Right? So there's no loss, and the gain is great. Yes. Right? It means you're not necessarily doing anything anyway, so if you're chanting, then what's the loss? Right? But the gain is very great. Even from a material point of view, everyone should take to the chanting the Hare Krishna mantra to be saved from all kinds of danger. This world is full of danger. Padam padam yad vipadam. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.58. Therefore, we should be encouraged to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra so that in our family, society, neighborhood, and nation, everything will be smooth and free from danger. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.63 purport. In other words, the witch Putana posed no threat to the inhabitants of Gokula. Krishna allowed her to enter simply to give her his mercy. Because she wouldn't be able to give trouble to anybody else. Right? Any demon who came in never gave trouble to anybody else. Yes. Right? Because Krishna immediately takes care of them. So in that way there is no problem, because Krishna is there. Even though you can say, well, the demons are coming, but Krishna always takes care of them. It's not that he doesn't know the demons aren't there, who they are. Like that.
Yeah. It seems that the demons are focused on Krishna.
Yes.
They're not focused on the devotee of Krishna.
No. It's just on Krishna. Yeah, because that's the first thing, is it inimical towards the Lord. Then you can be inimical towards devotees. Yeah. Generally, anybody who's inimical towards the devotees generally means they're inimical to the Lord. Otherwise, how would it? You can't really have affection for the Lord and be inimical to the devotees. It doesn't really work.
Sometimes it seems like it.
Yeah?
Yeah? You know, you have devotees who have come from, like, social...
Oh, okay, yeah, that's there. But then it's just a matter of, as they realize Krishna, they'll realize Krishna means everything. Yeah. So that means it includes his devotees, his energies, his opulences. Yeah. So then they have to get used to that. You know, like some people can accommodate, okay, Krishna and the chanting, but can't accommodate money, or authority, or power, influence, beauty, you know, any of these kind of things, you know, nice prasad, you know, they just can't have trouble with these things. You know, the senses, all these different things they can't accommodate. But with time, then they're able to, as they get purified. So the point is that they connect to Krishna in any way. So here the demons are connecting to Krishna, they're focused on Krishna. Though it may not be, you know, ideal. You know, it's not what Rupa Goswami recommends for pure devotional service.
It is a good start.
It's a good start. It's a good start. Their focus is very, very great. Yeah, that's the... Krishna places lotus feet, the object of Lord Brahma's meditation, on Putana's lap and allowed her to caress him. By this, Jashoda and Rohini were greatly astonished. Putana Rakshasi's heart was fierce and cruel, but she looked like a very affectionate mother. Thus she resembled a sword in a sheath. Although seeing her within the room, Jashoda and Rohini, overwhelmed by her beauty, did not stop her, but remained silent because she treated the child like a mother. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.6.9. So it's overwhelmed by her beauty, because the general tendency is someone's beautiful. Why? Because of piety.
Yeah. Yes.
You're generally not, beautiful by lack of piety. Yes. So there's the tendency if someone's beautiful or attractive, like this, there's tend to be more of a trust. because that means they're pious, and pious generally means they'll act nice. Right? So she was beautiful, and like that she treated Krishna like a mother. Right? So she, you know, was doing all the right things. So even though her intent wasn't right, she still was doing those things connected to Krishna. So it's the same principle for us. We're doing our activities, you know, but it's connected to Krishna. We have our own motives. I mean, our motive may not be to Krishna, right? But, you know, here is... But the point is that she had her own motive to get done. So we have our own motives in doing what we do and connecting it to Krishna. So she's performing an activity connected to Krishna. Therefore, one becomes purified.
Yes.
Right? And if you purify Putana, then you're going to have that devotion that she had for Krishna previously. Therefore, it's natural that she goes to Goloka.
Yes. Right. I always was curious how everybody who saw Putana, she immediately recognized her beauty and were praising her.
Yes.
But these are the inhabitants of Goloka, which are described as the most beautiful also, the golden gopis. So how you can, and I was in Boma, but still this is Marajasoda and the Goloka.
No, because it's, you know, means even in the material world, you do have great beauty in this here by piety and stuff like that. So to be such big demons with mystic powers means it's like this: if you don't necessarily look very good, but you have the mystic power to change yourself into an apsara, then there must be some piety there. Otherwise, where does the mystic power come from? So they've done great austerity, great penance, great, you know, vows and things to get that kind of control, like that. So they're pious, so they'll have. Of course, there's not as much beauty as, you know, let's say the gopis, but at the same time, that beauty is there. It's not that they can't appreciate it. So it's just like we'll see some beauty here, and you can see the beauty because it's Krishna's potency. So she's only manifesting an aspect of Krishna's potency. Now, how much Yoga Maya is involved in all that, that's another thing, but the Acharyas don't bring that point out so much. At least not in this aspect. You know, it may, in other words, we're dealing with a certain aspect. We're trying to bring out Krishna's mercy on the demons. So we don't bring out things necessarily that make us, you know, feel materially satisfied. You know, like that. So you know, that aspect is there. Those will be brought out in another place. Right? Because the Acharyas will discuss all the things. But they'll bring it out somewhere else. Not that it doesn't have relevance, because Krishna remembers everything. Right? That's the point of the Ushupanishad, is whatever I've done, you please remember that. You know? So Krishna does. That's the thing. He doesn't forget. We forget. He doesn't forget. Right? So he knows what the living entity did at any time. Otherwise, how does the Jnata Sukriti build up? Right? Because if it was up to us to remember, we would never get to come to you know, how you say, Shraddha. We just wouldn't get there. You know, like that. We forget what we did yesterday. Or even, you know, what did you have for breakfast? It's kind of, you know, you don't. Can't remember if you ate that bucket or this bucket.
Yeah.
You know, if you're up to date, you're still one day behind.
Right? Something.
Yeah. So that's the whole. That's the whole thing. You know, is that we're trying to see the kindness of Krishna, right? And so what's being pointed out is you have all these great devotees with great effort. They are performing their devotional service, austerities and that, and then, you know, getting some contact with Krishna. But in devotion, right? Because we're talking about. But here, even the demons are getting such mercy. And then we see is that Krishna is just coming on his own. Without big, you don't hear the Pandavas sitting down and doing meditation or austerity to get Krishna to come visit them. Right? They just have some problem or, you know, some political thing to work out or do a yajna or something, and Krishna comes. And sometimes he just comes on his own. You know, it's just he wants to go visit. So he comes and he lives in their house, not as a guest, an honored guest, but he comes as just family. So then, you know, that mercy is the greatest. You know, because otherwise then all these other things have already been shown. And so then that's the thing, is that how much greater is this. But at the same time, as we're, you know, learning about Krishna's kindness here. You know, with the idea that it's supposed to give us some hope.
Yes.
So we don't have to be overly jealous. Not jealous. Why him? Okay, he's okay. Why not me?
That was the thing over there.
Hmm?
That was the thing over there.
Yeah.
The emblem.
Hmm?
Emblem of jealousy?
Somebody has to represent.
Yes. Just doing my duty.
Yes. Somebody's got to stand up.
Yes.
Okay, footnote 9. Srila Prabhupada here reveals another lesson to be learned from this pastime. Sometimes a beautiful woman is dangerous because everyone, being captivated by external beauty, maya mohita, is unable to understand what is in her mind. Right? I think you have the... it's a French word. You know, about the... Something avenue. I don't know. Femme fatale. Something.
Femme fatale, yes.
Yes, femme fatale. Yes, yeah, so that's...
You don't have it in English, right?
We use that term.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just so good.
Yes.
You don't get much better than that. So, if you have the French word, why would you use the English? Yeah, what is it, crepe? Or you have pancake? You know, crepe is much better. Bun or croissant.
Yeah.
It's a
choice.
Yeah, yeah,
so. Yeah. Imagine in France, in the past, like 30, 40 years ago, there were many movies about the femme fatale.
Yeah, no, it was very popular before. Yeah, yeah. Very, very popular.
Now less.
Now a little less.
But yeah. Before, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because then the men were strong, so the women could be strong. Yeah. So the problem is, if you want to have femme fatale, you have to have a man that's strong enough, but then. The real problem is it's politically incorrect to have a man that strong. You know, like that. Like that. You know, he needs to be a bit more metro. You
know?
Rock Hudson or something, you know. He goes, just about to do something, just 1 second, pulls out some hand motion. That's bad. I never like to break the guy's neck with rough hands.
Mark, there was a previous president of the United States who said the problem with the French is they don't have a word for entrepreneur. You can probably guess which one.
Recent. Yeah. Okay. That's one that says, something about, you know, there is, you know, what's American food? You know, he said French fries. No, that's French. Pizza, that's Italian. Taco, that's Mexican. You know, that's the problem.
Just keep going.
Yeah, they're you know, where is it? Yeah. That's okay, what is Prabhupada saying? Got distracted by the femme fatale.
that's the point.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Yeah, everyone being captivated by external beauty is unable to understand what is in their mind. You know, talking something else. Yeah. Those who are captivated by the beauty of the external energy are called maya mohita. Mohitam nabijanati mam ebhya param avyayam. Bhagavad Gita 7:13. Nate vidhu swarta gatim hi vishnum durasaya ye bahir arta manina. Srimad Bhagavatam 7:531. Here, of course, the two mothers, Rohini and Jashoda, were not Maya Mohita, deluded by the external energy. But to develop the pastimes of the Lord, they were captivated by Yoga Maya. Such Maya Mohita is the action of Yoga Maya. So then here, then the Acharya is saying, they're being attracted by Yoga Maya. So then it's like that. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.6.9. Okay. Yeah, because that's the general thing, is that, you know, that attractiveness, and then anything can be done. Right?
Yeah.
That was not okay. Thanks to having the opportunity to treat Krishna, Putam became his mother eternally, as several authorities in Srimad Bhagavatam affirm, according to Sukadeva Goswami. Putana was always hankering for the blood of human children, and with that desire she came to kill Krishna. But because she offered her breast to the Lord, she attained the greatest achievement. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.6.35, footnote 10. Srila Prabhupada explains that Putana's motherly gesture mimicked the perfect love of the gopis, Krishna's dearest devotees. Putana had no affection for Krishna. Rather, she was envious and wanted to kill him. Nonetheless, because with or without knowledge she offered her breast, she attained the highest achievement in life. But the offerings of devotees attracted to Krishna and parental love are always sincere. A mother likes to offer something to her child with affection and love. There's no question of envy. So here we can make a comparative study. If Putin can attain such an exalted position in spiritual life by neglectfully, enviously making an offering to Krishna, what is to be said of Mother Jashoda and the other gopis who served Krishna with such great affection and love, offering everything for Krishna's satisfaction? The gopis automatically achieved the highest perfection. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended the affection of the gopis, either in maternal affection or in conjugal love, as the highest perfection in life. Ramya kadachit upasana vrajavadhu vardagena ya kalpita. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.6.35-36 purport. Right, so here we're seeing his compassion that even on the demons who are inimical, how much they get. So let alone what happens if one is approaching perfection. Right? So therefore one does not have to worry. One is getting all the benefit.
Just we're impatient.
Yes, that's it. Yes.
Putana in her previous life, as you explained before, that she had some motherly affection, but it's Krishna's will, free will, that he's rewarded that.
Yes.
On the other side, with her inimical feeling towards Vamanadeva, is that directly the cause of why she then later takes the form of hating children and drinking their blood and so on?
That might
be able to make a connection.
So that one might be more mechanical or automatic reaction.
Yeah. But I mean, it's because there is some connection to Krishna, but you don't have that attractive element, so they get power and everything like that. Like Ravana gained great opulence, so it can be that she attained, you know, such mystic ability and all that because of
mentioned there about she always wanted to drink the blood of children, and she had the feeling of hatred towards Lord Vama as a small
child. Yeah, it could be some connection. As Lord Brahma said to Lord Krishna, Sadveshad Iva putanapi sakula tvam eva devapita. You have already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members in exchange for her disguising herself as a devotee. Sad, real, eternal, veshat, clothes. Okay. Sad, real and eternal, and veshat, clothes. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.5. Even Putana's dead body was restored to the horrible form of a witch, was sanctified as Krishna's playground. Without fear, the child Krishna was playing on the upper portion of Putanand, Rakshasi's breast. And when the gopis saw the child's wonderful activities, they immediately came forward with great jubilation and picked him up. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.6.18. And when her corpse was burnt, it gave off a fragrance like precious agaru, which spread in all directions. Because of Krishna's having sucked the breast of Rakshasi Putana, when Krishna killed her, she was immediately freed of all material contamination. Her sinful reactions automatically vanished, and therefore, when her gigantic body was being burnt, the smoke emanating from her body was fragrant like agaru incense. Right? You know, 12-mile log of agaru.
Yeah, that's pretty.
That's not bad.
Fragrant.
Other persons who came to Gokula also obtained special mercy from Krishna. The sons of Kuvera, entrapped in the bodies of Arjuna trees, found themselves in the midst of the wonderful pastimes of Damodar. Krishna released these two sons from Narada's curse, listened to their prayers, and bestowed upon them prema bhakti. Yet another example, Agasura, was graced by Krishna's entrance into Aga's huge mouth, along with the cowherd boys and calves. And Aga attained liberation from Krishna in a way that astounded the whole world. His dead body served in his attraction in Braj. Right? So I guess it became a... this is, you know, your original theme park.
Yeah. Roadside attraction.
Yeah, because they would go and play there every day.
Yeah.
Oh, King Parikit, when the python-shaped body of Agasura dried up into merely a big skin, it became a wonderful place for the inhabitants of Vrindavan to visit, and it remained so for a long, long time. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.12.36. The Srimad Bhagavatam describes Agasura's fate as follows. From the body of the gigantic python, a glaring effulgence came out, illuminating all directions, and stayed individually in the sky until Krishna came out from the corpse's mouth. Then, as all the demigods looked on, this effulgence entered into Krishna's body. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.12.33. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains this verse. The light in the serpent's body was Shuddha-sattva, according to Sridhar Swami. That an evil person can get liberation, as illustrated here, is for instilling faith in the people. Though the soul is normally invisible, embraced by the Shakti of the Lord, this soul became visible directly as a great light. This is Jiva Goswami's opinion in the Vaishnava Toshani. Like the great light of the Parabrahman, the light of the soul is not visible to material eyes. It becomes visible by the Lord's will, like his own form. In order to show all the world directly the Lord's quality of giving liberation even to the demons. This is one opinion. According to verses 38 and 39, Agasura attained a form like the Lord's and attained the Lord's abode. Footnote 11. Text 38 explains that Agasura attained a body exactly like that of Vishnu. And the verse after that also clearly states that he attained a completely spiritual body like that of Narayana. Indeed, he showed such great mercy that even Agasura, the most sinful miscreant, was elevated to being one of his associates in achieving Swarupi Mukti, which is actually impossible for materially contaminated persons to attain. If even only once or even by force one brings the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead into one's mind, one can attain the supreme salvation by the mercy of Krishna, as did Agasura. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.12.38-39. And so because he thought of the Lord's form, that's the whole point. If he's, that aspect of the Lord's form is there, and he accepts that, then one can get entrance into Vaikuntha. Not then one gets that liberation. You know, so it just depends if there's that attraction or not.
Sarupya Mukti is what type of
form? Same form.
Same form. Yes.
So that's why it says, attain the spiritual body like that of Narayana.
Yes.
From this, it is clear that Agasura did not attain mere Sayuja Mukti, but Sarupi Mukti. Therefore, the light which is visible. Oh, wait a minute.
this is the whole page is the footnote.
Okay, yeah. So we have to go on. Srila Prabhupada comments. In the case of Agasura, one may argue that he was not a devotee. The answer to this is that he thought of Krishna for a moment with devotion. Bhaktiyaham ekaya grahyam. Ugrahya. Without devotion, one cannot think of Krishna. And conversely, whenever one thinks of Krishna, one undoubtedly has devotion. Although Agasura's purpose was to kill Krishna, for a moment Agasura thought of Krishna with devotion, and Krishna's associates wanted to sport within Agasura's mouth. Similarly, Putana wanted to kill Krishna by poisoning him, but Krishna took her as his mother because she had accepted the milk of her breast. Swapam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayata. Bhagavad Gita 2:40. There are many instances of this, and among them is Agasura, who attained the salvation of Saurupya Mukti. Therefore, the process of is satatam kirtayanto mam yatantas cha drita vrataha. Bhagavad Gita 9:14. Those who are devotees always engage in glorifying Krishna. One who always thinks of Krishna must attain vimukti, special salvation as the Lord's personal associate. Not necessarily in Vrindavan, but at least in Vaikuntha. This is called Swarupya Mukti, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.12.39 per part. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur adds, that Krishna gives liberation to his enemies is a remarkable quality in his completeness. He does, however, reward according to the mood of the person approaching him. From the statement that Agasura's body became the playground for the boys for many days, it should be understood that the demon's unfavorable attitude had been transformed into favorable attitude, and that he attained Swarupya in Vaikuntha, but he did not attain a form in Vrindavan because of his lack of that particular type of bhakti. Right? So it's according to the type of bhakti you have. So there's just a moment, so that moment's enough, but it's not Braja bhakti, so therefore he's not going to get that. But it's enough to put him into Vaikuntha.
Right? And I saw Putana, she had a Braja bhakti.
It appears that there was something because they had that mood like, because in Vaikuntha, there is no such thing as God doesn't have a mom.
Yes.
Right? You know? Like that. So it'd have to go into there. So I guess by the being, you know, purified, and then,
yes,
you know, somehow or another.
Unknowingly, she was following in the footsteps of Mother Yashoda.
Yeah, but she didn't. Like that. So it just takes a moment. From this, it is clear that Agasura did not attain Sayuja Mukti, but Swarupya Mukti. Therefore, the light which was visible was the light from Agasura's spiritual body, which he attained at that moment. Because the body itself was spiritual, it could not be seen with material eyes. His entrance into the Lord's body was just a show, as in the case of Shishupala and Dantavakra. Though Shishupala and Dantavakra attained Swarupya as eternal associates of the Lord, when they died a light from their bodies entered into the Lord. This is another opinion about the visibility of the light. Sardartha Darshini 10.12.33. In addition to bestowing boons, Krishna sometimes also punishes his loving devotees in Vraja, as when he abandoned the gopis during the rasa dance. This he did to increase the intensity of their love for him. Because Krishna was enchanted by the gopis' love, his prime reason for abandoning them was to hear them speak like mad women in separation from him. Thus, whether one seeks to worship God or oppose him, it is best to direct one's feelings towards Purna Purushottam Sri Krishna in all circumstances. So if you want to be favorable, then best Krishna. If you want to be unfavorable,
yes,
best Krishna. So, like that, because you'll get more benefit that way, you know, either way. Sri Parikit said, while singing enthusiastically in this way, the sage instructed his own tongue, which was greedy to chant the glories of Lord Madhava. Oh, you are too busy talking about the greatness of our master. To stop that tongue, he then seized it with his teeth. Dear tongue, he then acknowledged, this effort of yours attests to your great fortune. As far as you are able, just go on speaking something about these beloved devotees of Krishna. Sri Narada suddenly remembers that he was here to glorify the Pandavas and in jest chastises his tongue for misbehaving. To avoid discouraging his tongue, Narada gave it some practical advice. If you cannot adequately praise Krishna, then at least try to praise his devotees. If you cannot describe the devotees' transcendental glories, then simply describe their activities. If you cannot describe everything about those activities, then just describe something. Even if you cannot speak with full realization, speak anyway. The attempt to say something will be auspicious. His tongue was sincerely relishing the pleasure of glorifying the moon, born from the ocean of the Madhu dynasty. But there was little hope to accomplishing much by this attempt. Brahma, with his four tongues, and Ananta, with his thousands, had failed to fully describe the glories of Sri Madhava. How then could Narada, one insignificant tongue, be so impudent as to try? Narada proposes to his tongue, "You would do better to glorify the Lord's devotees than to glorify the Lord. Although the greatness of the devotees is also ultimately indescribable, the Lord's greatness has no beginning or end, defeats all attempts at analysis and classification, and cannot be fully understood even by the Lord himself. To Narada, however, the Lord's devotees seem similar to human beings. He has seen them, so his tongue should be able to describe their deeds. If his tongue offends the devotees by making false statements about them or by distorting accounts of their activities, the devotees will easily overlook those mistakes, because devotees are always compassionate to unfortunate persons. Therefore, Narada recommends glorifying the Vaishnavas as the best engagement for his tongue." 32. Sri Narada continued, "O greatly saintly Pandavas, is anyone bold enough to let his tongue describe the unique love for Krishna that each of you has, or the special mercy he bestows upon you?" Feeling himself unfit, Narada indicates that only a shameless person would dare attempt to elaborate on the greatness of each of the Pandavas. But Narada cannot stop, because his tongue is reluctant to speak about anything else, and refuses to remain silent. 33. "Your mother, Prita, once heard from the mouth of Akrura a single statement by Krishna, sweet with affection and meant to console her. As soon as she heard it, she plunged into a swiftly flowing current of prema." Narada, before praising the Pandavas individually, begins by praising their mother. The deep devotion of Krishna evidently runs in the family. On one occasion in Mathura, as recounted in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna asked Akrura to visit the Pandavas to see how they were withstanding Duryodhana's harassments. Krishna told Akrura, "You are indeed the best of our friends, so please go to Hastinapur and, as the well-wisher of the Pandavas, find out how they are doing." Srimad Bhagavatam 10:48-32. During this visit, the Pandavas' mother, Prita, met with Akrura. Because Akrura was a pure Vaishnava, the very first words she heard him speak kindled in her heart the ecstasies of love for Krishna. 34. She often lamented with poignant words that could shatter the heart of anyone who heard them. And she bore the burden of love for all of you, staying tied to you only because you are very dear to Lord Krishna. Mother Prita fully trusted Krishna's protection because she was a surrendered devotee. Her complaints and expressions of anxiety did not arise from material contaminated consciousness, but rather were her own special symptoms of ecstasy. She did not hesitate to open her heart directly to Krishna, as she did during the reunion at Kurukshetra. "Krishna, Krishna, O great yogi, O supreme soul and protector of the universe, O Govinda, please protect me, who have surrendered to you. I and my sons are being overwhelmed by trouble. For persons fearful of death and rebirth, I see no shelter other than your liberating lotus feet. For you are the supreme Lord." Srimad Bhagavatam 10:49-11-12. Naturally, for a pure devotee of Krishna, Prita wanted to give all her love to him, forgetting material attachments to family and everything else. But because her sons were also exclusive devotees of Krishna, she maintained her affection for them. So she was only connected to Krishna because they were connected to Krishna. Then they had a relationship. So you see is that relationships go on nicely within the devotional life, but it's based around Krishna. Right? So sometimes we have the idea because if it's not, the material side of it is not real, so then we just drop relationship. But the point is then the devotional aspect is there. So it doesn't change. We see like the bondage, it doesn't change. 33.
It seems that the name of Govinda is very much used for praying.
Yeah, no, it's common. Everybody uses it. It means all the realms use Govinda. Because he's the controller of the senses, pleaser of the senses, you know, the pleaser of the cows.
Yes.
So it has many aspects. So then he's always, that's a very well-used name. You know, so everybody who does kirtan or refers uses the term Govinda.
Yes, yeah. Like Krishna, like Brahman, Brahma Samhita also.
Yeah, also uses Govinda, like that. Like it said, Tirupati, they just call the Lord Govinda. His name is Venkateshwar, but they call him Govinda.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so like that, Govinda is very, very popular.
It's because of his relation with Goloka, with the cows?
You have that aspect, yes. You have that aspect also. And that he's the pleaser of the senses.
Yes.
Like that. So, like that. Like we see in Bhagavad Gita, then Arjuna tactfully uses the term Govinda because things aren't working out very nicely.
Yes.
So then it's Govinda, he pleases the senses.
Yes.
The Prabhupada makes that point. You know, he used it in that way.
Yes.
And
Mother,
also husband of the goddess of
fortune. Oh, yeah. So then, why will so much be lost? And yeah, so like that. So these are all standard. Because in every realm, then the pastimes of Krishna are popular. Because every sampradaya, they all have Janmashtami and, you know, here are the pastimes of Krishna and everything like that. It's just whether they consider him to be the origin or Mahanarayan to be the origin. That's all. Mm-hmm. 35. Krishna, the life of the Yadus. Cuckoo.
Yes, going.
Cuckoo. Krishna, the life of the Yadus, tried for a long time to leave for Dwarka. But by enveloping him with plaintive prayer, she kept him in her home. Krishna stayed with the Pandavas throughout the war between Yudhishthira and Duryodhana. But he was also Yadu Jivana, the life of the Yadus. So without his presence, the residents of Dwarka seemed almost dead. Krishna tried to leave Hastinapur to return to the Yadus. But Mother Prita dissuaded him with her prayers and induced him to stay a few months longer. A few months, not even just a couple of hours, a couple of days, a few months. So. Those prayers of Prita are included in the first canto, chapter 8 of Srimad Bhagavatam. 36. Krishna bestowed upon Yudhishthira the highest prestige, greater than that of anyone else in the upper and lower worlds. By favors like allowing Bhima to kill Jarasandha, Krishna granted Bhima unequaled fame. Because Krishna could have killed him before. He came and attacked his city 18 times, but he didn't.
It's more fun.
Yeah, because technically he's a relative, because Kamsa is in their family. And Kamsa's wives are Jarasandha's daughters, so that means that he's technically an uncle, kind of, like that. So.
But it's also more fun to have the devotees kill him.
Yeah, well, that's it, because then they get the glory. To enhance the reputation of King Yudhishthira, Krishna encouraged him to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. Krishna helped the Pandavas dispose of Jarasandha, who was the major obstacle to the sacrifice, because you had to have no king opposed, and he was definitely had his own idea that he wanted to be the emperor, so he's definitely not going to you know, let this happen. By giving Bhima the honor of defeating Jarasandha in one-to-one combat, during Jarasandha's repeated attacks on Mathura, Krishna himself had gotten many opportunities to kill him. But Krishna patiently waited for the suitable opportunity so that the credit... so the credit would go to Bhima. 37. Saintly Arjuna became renowned throughout the world for his intimate friendship with Krishna. I can never sing all the glories of Arjuna, even if I recite hundreds of Puranas. Darda calls Arjuna Bhagavan out of great respect. This term is usually reserved for God. But the sage could justify using it, citing the scriptural definition. A person who knows about the creation and destruction of the universe, the karmic comings and goings of embodied creatures, and the forces of enlightenment and illusion may be called Bhagavan. Vishnu Puran 6.5.78. Therefore, Narad Muni is sometimes known as Bhagavan. 38. And for Nakula and Sahadev, everyone is seen, you know, because he's also Narayan, Rishi, so he's, you know, just his possession is very great.
Yeah.
And as for Nakula and Sahadev, everyone has seen many times how fixed they are in love for Krishna, as shown, for example, by how those twins behaved in the deliberations on whom to worship first. In the Rajasuya, Agra Puja Vichar. The twins Nakula and Sahadev worked together so closely that whatever either of them did could as well have been done by the other. And everything either of them did was impelled by pure love for Krishna. The example Narada cites to demonstrate the twins' love for Krishna, the Rajasuya Yajna, appears in the 74th chapter of the 10th canto. It is highly apt to the context of Narada Muni's praise of the Pandavas, therefore you print it here in detail. On the day of extracting the soma juice, King Yudhishthira properly and very attentively worshipped the priests and the most exalted personalities of the assembly. The members of the assembly then pondered over who among them would be worshipped first. But since there were many personalities qualified for this honor, they were unable to decide. Footnote 12. Why were the Rajasuya proceedings marred with the indecision? Srila Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book. Another important procedure is that the most exalted personality in the assembly of such a sacrificial ceremony is first offered worship. This particular ceremony is called Agra Puja. Agra means first, and Puja means worship. This Agra Puja is similar to the election of a president. In the sacrificial assembly, all the members were very exalted. Some proposed to elect one person as the perfect candidate for accepting Agra Puja, and others proposed someone else. Oh, so that means Agra means first. So they're thinking the Taj Mahal is the first amongst all the places. Okay. On the other hand, president of the assembly with the greatest personalities from the three worlds over, kings, brahmanas, rishis, devatas, and all manner of celestial denizens. On the other hand, the decision to appoint Krishna was obvious to Yudhishthira Maharaj. Regardless, he knew that his decision would be fraught with controversy and surely offend someone, and he thus deferred his decision. This pastime is explained in further detail by the Acharyas. As the great Acharya Jiva Goswami points out, text 15 of this chapter states that the members of the assembly were not astonished at the opulence of the sacrifice, since they knew that King Yudhishthira was a devotee of Lord Krishna. Still, text 18 now states that the assembly could not select the most deserving candidate for being worshipped first. This indicates that many of the brahmanas present were not fully realized transcendentalists, but rather conventional brahmanas, uncertain of the supreme conclusion of the Vedic wisdom. Similarly, Acharya Vishwanath comments that the undecided members of the assembly were the less intelligent ones, and not such exalted personalities, Brahma, Shiva, and Dvaipayana Vyas, who thought, since today no one is asking our opinion, why should we say anything? Furthermore, here is Sahadev, who is renowned for his sharp skill in analyzing all sorts of circumstances. Right, because he is also, you can tell he's sharp because he's Sahadev is an astrologer. Right, and we mentioned, as we mentioned in the Shastra, it mentions if you want to find a good candidate for astrology, you take an unlucky fruit, go up to the sloping roof of a building, keeping the candidate next to you, take the unlucky fruit, throw it up on the roof, and when it hits the ground, then you turn to him and said, how many times did it turn? You know, make a full rotation.
Yeah.
And if you can say, you have a student. Right? So that means he's smart. He's sharp. He's observant.
He knows what's going on.
Yeah. He can help appoint the person who is to be worshipped first. Only if he somehow fails to speak or cannot understand the situation will we speak up, despite no one's having inquired from us. Right? So they'll leave it to Sahadev because they know he's going to do. But if not, and they can't figure it out, then they'll speak up only because they haven't figured it out and Sahadev hasn't said anything, even though they haven't asked. But since they haven't asked and they're talking, we'll just let them talk. No, because otherwise you get in the way and you have to argue, and why should you do that? Having made up their minds in this way, the greatest personalities remain silent. This is how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur advises us to understand what occurred in the assembly. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.74.18. Does that end that one? Yes, it does. Okay. Finally, Sahadev spoke up. Sahadev said, certainly it is Achyuta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the chief of the Yadavas, who deserves the highest position. In truth, he himself comprises all the demigods worshipped in a sacrifice, along with such aspects of the worship as the sacrificial sacred place, the time, and the paraphernalia. Right? So it's not that he's just himself. He's also the sacred place, the sacred time, and the sacred paraphernalia. Right? Because others, just they themselves are sacred. But he's that and everything else. Right? So that's what makes it special.
Yes.
This entire universe is founded upon him, as are the great sacrificial performances with their sacred fires, oblations, and mantras. Shankhya and yoga both aim towards him, the one without a second. O assembled members, that unborn Lord, relying solely on himself, creates, maintains, and destroys the cosmos by his personal energies, and thus the existence of this universe depends on him alone. Right, so we see is that in the creation, then, as was pointed out, then through his energies, then so much is accomplished. The external, that means Maya and everything is doing all these different aspects. But they're dependent upon Krishna's potency to do that. Yes. But Krishna, just dependent upon himself, he's doing everything. Yes. Right? Yes. So he acts through the others as agents. He creates the many activities of this world, and thus by his grace, the whole world endeavors for the ideals of religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. Therefore, we should give the highest honor to Krishna, the Supreme Lord. If we do so, we will be honoring all living beings and also our own selves. Right? Because they couldn't work out who to worship. So by worshiping Krishna, then you've worshipped everybody. So all those great personalities, everyone, even down to themselves, everyone's being worshipped. Right? You know? So this means this is, so then you can look at it. This is, if you really have an ego about yourself, this is the best way to go about worshipping yourself.
Yeah.
Is, you know, fully and sincerely worship Krishna, then yourself's already worshipped in the process.
Good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jimi Hendrix got it wrong.
Yeah, yeah. No, he got it wrong. Yeah, he said. Yeah.
I knew it could be done.
Yes. Okay, yes. Anyone who wishes the honor he gives to be reciprocated infinitely should honor Krishna. Right? Because there's always the discussion on how much benefit comes back from a particular ritual. And there's always the thing that'll come back this much, that much. Then there's always the infinite.
Yes.
Like there's in the yajna, they have this special spoon. It's a big, huge pot at this end with this long, you know, tube that goes down to the fire. Because when you're doing these, you're doing karmakanda yajnas. So then you have the fire under the ground. Right? You have the huge pit. So you can put this on the side. And by pouring ghee, you know, the ghee, you know, will go and make the fire because it's 6 feet down. So then you know, yes. It'll have the trajectory. It'll go nicely into the fire and it won't burn up itself. You can't do that in the above ground ones. You know, because the above ground ones are for worshipping the Lord. So at the point of that is you pour ghee and it's considered you get unlimited benefit. You know, because you can just keep pouring and keep pouring. So that's the whole. So they're always interested in that element. So Sahadeva Shmen. So if we're any interested in reciprocated infinitely, then we should all worship Krishna. Because anything else, it's called infinite, but it's not. It ends. Right? So Krishna's the only one that you actually get eternal or immortal results. Right?
Yeah.
Should honor Krishna, the perfect, peaceful, and perfectly complete soul of all beings, the Supreme Lord, who views nothing as separate from himself. Sukadev Goswami continued, having said this, Sahadev, who understood Lord Krishna's powers, fell silent. And having heard his words, all the saintly persons present congratulated him, exclaiming, "Excellent, excellent." The king was delighted to hear this pronouncement of the Brahmins, from which he understood the mood of the entire assembly. Overwhelmed with love, he fully worshipped Lord Krishna, the master of the senses. Okay, maybe it's coming up now. This is some point where Sahadev sticks his foot out and offers that anybody can come and touch head to it. who, you know, wishes... Okay, Lord Krishna's... Okay. Overwhelmed with love, he fully worshipped Lord Krishna, the master of the senses, so Yudhishthira Maharaj. After bathing Lord Krishna's feet, Maharaj Yudhishthira joyfully sprinkled the water upon his own head, and then upon the heads of his wife, brothers, and other family members and ministers. That water purifies the whole world. As he honored the Lord with presentations of yellow silken garments and precious jeweled ornaments, the king's tear-filled eyes prevented him from looking directly at the Lord. When they saw Lord Krishna thus honored, nearby all who were present joined their palms reverentially, exclaimed, "Obeisances to you, all victory to you." And then bowed down to him, flowers rained down from above. The intolerant son of Dhammaghosha, Shishupal, became infuriated upon hearing the glorification of Lord Krishna's transcendental qualities. He stood up from his seat and angrily waving his arms. That means you're really annoyed if you're waving your arms. Fearlessly spoke to the entire assembly the following harsh words against the Supreme Lord. But it's after, because they chose, okay, he's going, but because they did the worship, then he couldn't tolerate.
Yes.
So at least he didn't stand up before and make a mess of it. You know, they got to do it with him like that. Shishupal said, "The statement of the Vedas that time is the unavoidable controller of all has indeed been proven true, since the intelligence of wise elders has now become diverted by the words of a mere boy." Yeah, so here again we see time is the controller, right? O leaders of the assembly, you know best who is a fit candidate for being honored. Therefore, you should not heed the words of a child when he claims that Krishna deserves to be worshipped. Because he'll be one of the youngest in the assembly. Like that. How can you pass over the most exalted members of this assembly, topmost sages dedicated to the absolute truth, endowed with powers of austerity, divine insight, and strict adherence to severe vows, sanctified by knowledge and worshipped even by the rulers of the universe? How does this, you know, because you have Brahma, you have Shiva, you have Vyasa, you know, he's basically everybody who's there. How does this cowherd boy, the disgrace of his family, deserve your worship any more than a crow deserves to eat the sacred puro dasha cake, rice cake? Because they make that special cake and that are offered. They make them. That's the interesting thing, is things that you that will be offered into the fire are made on the fire. So if you're cooking things, they do it on the yagya fire and all that, and then that's what's offered in the fire, because then it's pure.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Like you see, is that the ghee is taken and put over the fire before it's offered, like that. You know, so that's the standard thing. You can take the whatever is the offering, that'll be put. You know, the kusa and all the different things are put. Like that. So. Okay, footnote 13. Acharya Vishwanath points out in detail how each of Shishupal's insults possesses a dual meaning. They can also be construed as praise. Here is but one example. Shishupal used the words to praise the members of the assembly in order to please them and then establish his own idea. He calls Krishna a polluter of the dynasty because he killed his uncle Kamsa. However, there's another meaning. Kul lapa means those who criticize or offend. Pamshayati means he kills. Therefore, kula pamshana means one who kills those who speak ill words. He says Krishna is like a crow, cock. However, another meaning is this, yata akakaha. He is without happiness, ka, or distress, akha, transcendental to all material dualities. Being in such a position, how does he deserve the same sacrificial offerings as Indra and others? More than that, you should offer him your soul. Right? So why you're just offering these things? That's that you give to Indra and that. You should be surrendering yourself. Right? Sardarta Darshini, 10:74-33. Like this, from what I understand, he gives an example of all 100 insults.
Okay.
So it's a very big purpose.
Yes.
How does one who follows no principles of the social and spiritual orders or of family ethics, who has been excluded from all religious duties, who behaves whimsically and who has no good qualities, how does such a person deserve to be worshipped? Right? So he has no varna and ashram because he's above, he's transcendental. He has no duties. He's beyond, whimsically because he can. He's independent. So these are all the ways he's praising. Yayati cursed the dynasty of these Yadavas, and ever since then, they have been ostracized by honest men and addicted to liquor. How then does Krishna deserve to be worshipped? These Yadavas have abandoned the holy lands inhabited by saintly sages and have instead taken shelter of a fortress in the sea, right? Because they were living in Mathura, which is that all these great personalities have lived there, great kings, great dynasties, and they've given that up and gone, and they're living out in the middle of the sea, right? A place where no Brahminical principles are observed, right? Because it's beyond, it's transcendental. There, just like thieves, they harass their subjects. Right? So that's okay, so stop here, and we'll continue with Shishupal's points.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaurav.